thank you for coming out in the rain. I know this is not the, I know if I weren't teaching, I would have considered not showing up. So I'm glad you came. The plan today is to do a couple clicker questions, and then John's going to give some demos about graph search that he's been working on. And then I was going to talk about sorting, and then last night my sister-in-law had a baby, and I hadn't finished all that I needed to do for the lecture. And so I punted, and I did something else instead. So I'm going to talk about randomness and cryptography and that sort of stuff, which would have been lecture 15, but I moved it up. So we'll see how much of that we get a chance to get to. John asked if he could do the clicker question, so I'm going to get a clicker. This one looks bad. John made up all these clicker questions, so if you don't like them.
No, I've never seen them before.
Yeah, now you can. Okay, so do you know what to do?
Presumably, I'm trying to realize what the answer is.
Well, you have to explain it afterwards.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about.
So you need to push start so that we can click in.
Okay, so.
And if you want to read the question,
so he dropped his keys, and he's executing a spiral search pattern for them, and they are n steps from the starting place. So presumably, we represent this as some sort of grid, right? Where you are starting here, your keys are somewhere, and you click. Right? How long in a function of steps will it take you to get to your keys if they are, your keys are here? This is n. How many squares will you have to step on to find your keys?
You don't have to get it exact, it's just it's like logarithmically, linearly, log-linearly, quadratically, exponentially.
So.
Oh, wait, hang on. There, it goes away.
Oh. Choice D. And some people chose that.
What was it? Log linearly and linearly. Right. So linear would be what it would, if you just walk directly to your keys, right? And the keys are n steps away, then you walk basically n steps, so that's linear in n. But here you end up actually filling up a whole rectangle, right? Because you're going to check all places up to that distance before you actually find your keys.
This is very similar to graph search.
Ah, excellent. All right, that's the leading.
All right, so let's
hide,
go.
Hide that.
Hide that.
And then do click next on my program. Oh, now I need a piece of paper.
How many nodes are in this graph represented as adjacent to this? Okay. Does everyone understand? So this is a list of lists, right? Each item in the big list, the first element, each item in the big list is a list of some. So the first item is the list of some. And that 2 means the first node in this list has a connection to the second node, the 2 index node, which is the third node, because we start at 0, and so on. So how many nodes are in that graph?
helpful to draw the graph for the next couple of questions.
Maybe I'll do that. It automatically resets from the last question, right?
The count does, yeah. It could be we're getting bleed over again. Okay. I think we're probably nearly done.
So if we draw this graph, node 0 is the first one. Well, the amount of nodes is equivalent to the length of that big list, and there are four entries in big list, so there's four nodes. But nodes are concerned. Oh, wait, second. I'm misunderstanding something.
How many nodes are in the graph?
Four.
That would be none of the above.
Oh, all right. Okay. So the answer is none of the above us. And so did you want me to?
Yeah, it'd be helpful to draw the graph.
So the first node, node 0, has a connection to node 2. So we draw that. Okay. The second node, node 1, doesn't connect anything. Third node goes to node 0 and node 1. And the last one goes to 0 and 2.
So you might want to move where you draw that. You might want to move where you draw node 3, because it's going to go to 0 and 2. Okay, because you're going to get crossings in the way.
Yeah, so.
There's the graph, it's got four nodes.
So which of these nodes is a source? And I'm going to neglect defining source, because that would make it very easy.
Source.
I just read the lecture last time. You'll be reminded momentarily.
So a source is a node that has no edges coming in. That's the definition. So which one of these? Is it 0 or not 0, 2, 3? It's not 1, so you finish it. Not 2. Must be 3. Because 3 has no edges coming to it, only edges going out. So that's choice D. Which, so why would people have chosen 0? I'm not sure.
I have no idea what that means.
Well, do you understand what a source node is?
I don't understand anything.
You said that before, and it wasn't true the last time.
But I have no idea what these two questions were about.
So this is a graph. This is a graph?
Yeah.
Okay, so I talked about a couple different special pieces of terminology having to do with graphs. One of them was, what is a source? So source is a node that has no incoming links. So in this graph, the nodes are the dots.
Yeah.
The links are the arrows. One of those, only one of those dots has no incoming arrows, no incoming links, and that's node 3.
No, 3 then is not, right?
So that, so the G equals, is that what you're talking about? So so that, so I talked about how you, in one way.
Oh, so bracket is a node?
Each, yeah, so there's, that's a list of lists. The first list is a list containing just two. The second list is a list containing nothing. The third list is a list containing zero and one. And the fourth list is a list containing zero and two. And so that, it's, and I'm gonna keep this the same for the next couple questions, is equivalent to the graph that John drew for you. So you don't have to redraw it.
So the source is what?
A source is a node that has no incoming length.
Were you here when I drew the graph?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you understand why I put each of these arrows here. Right? For node 3, I have two outgoing arrows. If you look over here, the 3 index, which is actually the fourth element, because we start at 0, 0, 1, 2, 3, has a list 0 and 2. So 3 goes to 0 and it goes to 2.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
I get it.
You can almost think of them as being little web pages with links on them. Interesting. What's that?
All right, so which node is the sink?
Ah.
I can't tell you because then you'd know the answer.
So it's more or less the same question as the last one.
Very
but the sink is kind of the opposite of the source.
So a sink is a node which has no outgoing edges. Instead of a source has no incoming, sink has no outgoing. Everything goes right into it. Obviously one. Okay. So that was choice B. Good.
So if this helps at all, I'm pretty sure that these bits of terminology come from viewing the graph as a bunch of places where water is flowing.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, so water's, if you look at this, if you think about how water could be flowing through this system here, the water would have to be coming out of 3, that would be the source of the water, and then it's flowing around in various places, and once it gets to 1, it goes down the drain, right? There's no way to get out from there, so it must be a sink, like a sinkhole or the sink, like in your kitchen sink.
So which sequence is a path? On this graph. This is just another definition kind of thing, so I'm not going to tell you the answer until later. So, what does it mean for a sequence to be a path? It means that starting at the first one, you can follow an edge to the second one, and then you can follow an edge to the third one. So if we say we want to test choice B to see if that's a path, first element is 2, start at 2. And we want to go to 0. Well, we have an edge to 0.
No, to B, you said, did you say choice B?
Oh, yes, I did. Okay, then we want to go to edge 1, or then we want to go to 1. There's an edge to 1. Then we want to go to 2. Well, we can't do that, so we know that's not a path. The correct answer would look to be A, because we can start at 2, and go to 0, and back to 2, and then to 1. So all those edges exist. So, good. Cycle. So a cycle is a special kind of path where along where it's being a valid path, you can get from the beginning to the end. You can also jump from the end back to the beginning. Right? So which one of these satisfies that? First we have to check. Yes? Yeah? I think that's correct. So how do we know that these are correct? Start at 2, go to 0, go to 2, then we have to wait.
So, I said the first one and the last one were the same.
Oh, okay, so the first one and the last one are the same. Well, definitely only one of those satisfies that.
That's true. I could have made a better question.
Okay.
Wait, what do you mean the first and last one the same?
So, to be a cycle, you start off in a node, you go over a series of edges.
Oh, you mean the first question and the last question?
No, the first node in the list and the last node in the list should be the same. You have to end up where you started.
Okay. So, it should have been like. Okay, yeah.
So, if we chose to say, is this a cycle? 1, it's not.
3, 0.
3, 0, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Is this a cycle?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Because it goes back.
Well, it has to be a path as well. Is this a path?
3, 0, 2.
We can go from 3 to 0. There's an edge there. Mm-hmm. We can go from 0 to 2. So this is 2. Go from 0 to 2. But we cannot go from 2 to 3. So this isn't a cycle. Because a cycle
but
must be a path.
But if you could, then it would be a cycle.
Right. If I drew in an extra edge, that would be a cycle.
I don't get where the 3 even comes from. Like, how do you even get the 3 there?
Alright. So each of these numbers corresponds to a spot in the description.
Oh, yeah, never mind. Everybody knows.
So 1 would be nothing, right?
1 has no outgoing edges. Right, so that list is a list of where you can get to from each node. 1 has nowhere to go, and that's represented here, because there are no links going out. But you can go to 1 if you start at node number 2.
Right, so just, you want to pop up the histogram?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Good.
Wait, hide.
Which is a tour. On the same graph.
Start.
I'll stop before it gets too bad. Hopefully. So, what's a tour?
Not
a tour is not a libel. Well, I'm sort of looking for the definition of a tour. A tour must be a path. A tour must be a path. And it must visit every single node.
Actually, it should be a cycle when it visits.
Oh, it has to be a cycle as well. Okay.
What is this?
A tour is a cycle through all nodes in the graph.
Right. So, remember, a cycle was a kind of path that started and ended at the same node.
Yes.
So a tour is a kind of cycle that visits every single node on the graph.
So is that one of the above? It's not the above.
That's right.
Oh, I never got the answer.
I had a minute to do it.
Wait, I have a question.
Yes.
For it to be a path, it has to go like 2 and 0 are a path, right? Because it goes from
yes.
2 to 0. Then. But like if it went from 3 to 0 to 2, and then the arrow from 2 to 3 was faced the other way, would that be a path still?
It'd be a path even if there was no arrow between 2 and 3, because it just told me 3, 0, 2. The 3 to 0 link is there. The 0 to 2 link is there.
Also, they don't have to have both arrows. I thought it had to be 0, 2 to be, like, you know how they have two arrows?
Yeah.
I thought that's the one that could be a path, no? As long as it has an arrow.
As long as you can go the direction you're heading in the path.
Okay.
So the opposite, if you went 2, 0, 3, that would not be a path.
Okay.
Because you cannot get from 0 to 3. Did I say the answer? No, I didn't show the answer. So A, choice A, 2. Well, you can't go from 2 to 3. So.
That might have been
the
other
class. Yes.
Oh, right, there
call.
We go.
That's probably the right answer from the other class. Or at least the popular answer.
Which is the shortest path from node 3 to node 1? For something to be the shortest path, it first has to be a path, right? So which of these are a path? 3 to 1. We cannot go from 3 to 1. There's no way. Cannot be it. 3, 0, 1. Well, we can go from 3 to 0, but not from 0 to 1. Can't do that. 3, 2, 1. That path exists. It could be that. 3, 0, 2, 1. That also exists. Then which of those is shorter? Obviously, 3, 2, 1 is shorter. So the correct answer should be D, or should be C. And
91%.
Okay.
All right.
So.
All right. So go into.
Oops, that's not what I meant to do.
Probably not. Go down to the bottom of the screen. Oh, that would work. All right. Go down to the bottom of the screen. And choose keynote.
I do demos first.
Oh, you don't need the slides for the demos.
Right. Demos, then slides, and some more demos. So how do I? All
right. So hit enter. And CD made.
Okay.
Not so much mod.
All right.
And now it should be familiar to you. You gotta have space after that. Okay.
No tab completion?
Yeah, it has tab completion.
It's not doing it though.
You know what? It doesn't know where it is. Do this. Do CD. Sorry, do PWD. Don't. Do CD space dash. Dash. Okay. Now do PWD. Now do CD to that, like go up one line. No, oh, that should work. Very clever. That might not work, actually. You can try it. Okay, that wouldn't work. So go up two lines.
Just go up. I'll just copy it.
No, just you have to type CD in front of the thing that's already there. No.
Oh, I can.
Yes, go up. Now go left. Control A. CD, space, enter. It's hard being a backseat driver right now.
All right, so that's actually supposed to be Walker, but I misspelled it.
Okay.
So what I have is a set of demos demonstrating various ways a computer can solve a maze. So the first one is just a guy walking around randomly, and we'll see how effective that is.
It's possible that it pops it up behind that window.
That's not on me.
It's been known to do that. There you go.
Oh wow, this guy's fast. let me start that over.
Can we see the maze? The colors aren't
right, so
ideal.
Strategy here is to walk around randomly.
Oh, there he goes.
I actually don't want to wait around to see if he gets to the end or not because it's going to take forever.
Well, why don't you say a little bit about how this is a graph, what this has to do with what we're talking about?
Oh, well, I'm going to get that.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll talk more about that.
All right. First, I want to show. I mean, this is very intuitive. You can imagine you're this guy walking around trying to solve the maze.
If you've had too many Twinkies.
I thought the string was going to show where you went and what keys are going.
Okay, well that's a good suggestion. That's another strategy.
That's not what he's doing.
In fact, that's very similar to what I'm going to have him do next.
Oh wait, he's almost there.
Let's just...
Yeah, that would have been good.
10 pieces. So this is a version... See, all these had the fast version. When on my laptop, it actually went so you could watch them, but on your laptop, apparently, it goes way too fast.
Wow.
So.
I feel special.
This version has him not backtracking. NB Walker stands for No Backtrack Walker. And it's over here. So let's see what happens when he just
Same maze, but he's going to follow a different strategy.
So he will never walk back. Oh, he got stuck. So let's try again. Let's see if the...
He's choosing randomly when he gets to an intersection?
Right. And he only...
He could luck into the path.
He could, in theory. Let's try again. Oh, he's doing pretty good so far.
Pretty good.
So... Prone to getting stuck if you have this strategy. Just don't backtrack over where you've been so far. Okay. One strategy you might know of is if you're in a maze, you always keep your hand on the right wall or something, and never let your hand leave that wall. So let's see what happens when you always turn left. He's keeping his left hand on the wall.
Left hand.
T Walker stands for Trace Walker. Now this is.
Can he still not retrace?
Yes, is he stuck not retracing his steps, or is the only issue? Yeah, I don't think he's paying attention to that. I think all he's doing is whenever he's just keeping his hand, keep the left hand on the wall, right? So when you get to a wall like this, you have to go around it.
So
you just keep the left hand on the wall. It doesn't pay attention to where it's been.
So he has an intersection. He can choose which way to go. chooses to go left, always chooses to go left. So, will he make it to the end?
Yeah.
It's looking good so far. He can backtrack because he doesn't care where he's been. He only knows he wants to always go left. Yeah. Could have chosen to go straight there. Might have gotten there a little faster. But he will, at least in this case, find his way to the end.
Does that usually work?
Well, that's a good question.
That's an excellent question.
In fact,
it's a foreseen question.
Yes. What if the maze looks like this? Do you think he's going to get to the end tracing his hand on the wall?
No.
It's like the TV show Lost.
In fact, he's just going
to...
It's
the
bottom.
The steps at the bottom.
Oh.
Yeah. So, there are examples where this doesn't really work that well. In fact, I'm just going to move this window so...
Yeah, you'll save a lot of effort later.
In fact, if you do, there's a very similar case.
So now you start it out on the outside.
Yes. It's not going to make it into the middle either.
And that's why nobody finds the people on Lost.
So this guy, he knows about the other guys. He knows they don't always make it where they're supposed to. So he has a different strategy. Every time he steps on a square, he drops something to remember that he's been there. And he also trails along red pieces. If he ever gets into a dead end or someplace where he can't go, he never wants to go where he's been. So if there's a wall where there's already a trunk, he'll backtrack on that string until he finds a direction he can go. Let's see how well that works.
Maybe you could describe that strategy. Yeah, I'm not sure.
Well, hopefully you can see he does not backtrack on a place where there's a crump unless he's forced to. Now he's forced to because there's nowhere else to go. So he backtracks along where the string was. Oh, I'm pointing to the screen. You can see. Probably not the best decision, because you know he could have gone right there, but he doesn't know any better. He doesn't really look ahead very well. But who thinks he'll eventually get there? Who thinks he'll always get there no matter what the maze? Well, you guys would be correct. This will always work.
Wait, so there's two kinds of intersections? Intersections that he's exhausted and intersections that he hasn't yet exhausted? Like, there's some choices he hasn't made yet.
Right. So whenever he's been on a place, he drops something to remember he's been on. And whenever he's deciding where to go, he looks. First, is there a place I have not been? If so, that's where I'm going. Is there... He made it. Then, if there is nowhere that he has not already been, he will walk back along the string. Until that's no longer the case, and he has somewhere new to go.
And so then he tries the new thing.
Right. So this will always work. But as you see, it might take longer than he absolutely needs to. In fact, he needs to explore the entire upper left portion of the screen, which was not necessary. Yes?
Or like large number of mazes, if you test it on like a lot of them, is this more efficient than the left hand on the wall strategy? Or?
It depends what a lot means, because you could find a large, infinite amount of mazes where left hand on the wall will not work at all. So.
Isn't there that type of analysis for this type, like to test the strategy? How do you test if the strategy is better than the left?
So that's not really something I was going to get into. So that'd be an interesting thing to talk about in a 300 level computer science course. So I think that might be the last one for this guy. Because the strategy will always work. Let's see, is there...
So the good thing is it always works, no matter what the maze is, no matter where the starting place and the ending place are. The bad thing was that it may explore too much of the maze. Does it find the shortest path to the goal?
Well, that's an interesting question.
I'm just asking.
So, I should do this as the fast version, actually, because you guys can sort of see how this is going to go.
No.
Well, you will see how this is going to go in a second.
Oops.
Anyone blink on that happen? It was going to take a long time, so I didn't want him to walk slowly along. But you see, he explores that entire extra area. Once he realizes he's in the dead end, he goes back, retraces his steps, finds the correct way. What if we change this a little bit? What if we remove the wall right here? What do you think will happen?
What do you mean remove the wall? Like,
if we change the maze.
Right, so I'll just show you what I mean, because that's what the next maze looks like. So what if the maze looks like this? What path do you guys think he's going to find? Given that last time he explored all of this area before doing the correct way, what path do you think he'll find in the end? Correct. Obviously not the best path. Maybe there's a better way. So how do I get to the slides now?
Okay, so go down to the bottom. Select keynote. Oh wait, actually, oh, you're right. That one, good. Just wait a second. There we go.
Oh, cool.
Whoa! I've never seen that before. Wait a second. Wow. That can't be good.
Maybe we should have restarted the computer in class.
Wow. Oh good, you fixed it.
That just tells me the keynote stopped drawing.
Okay, so now go to, did you see the play? Okay, stop play. Yeah, good. Just wait one moment. It'll come back. 3, 2, 1.
How do I go forward and backwards? Page down.
Space bar and delete.
And delete. Oftentimes you can see a path right through a maze. You can just look at it and see, well, should go that way. There's the path. Anyone get this joke? No one.
It's from a TV show.
The Underpants Nose.
Yes. Do you remember what the steps were or the phases?
No.
Step one, steal the underpants.
Yeah.
Step three, profit.
What's step two?
What do you mean?
They never do tell you step two. It was from a South Park episode.
Sometimes it's not so easy to find the path right away. Can anyone see the path?
Or maybe.
In fact, the actual correct path is hidden by the bubble, so you can't. I didn't realize that till later.
Maybe that's why you're lost. You've got to stop using thought bubbles.
Yeah. Too much thinking gets in the way.
What we need to do is find an alternate representation of the maze. So, we've been talking about graphs. Clicker questions were all on graphs. The lecture yesterday was about graphs. How can we represent that maze as a graph? What I did here, as I said, every place the little guy can be is represented by a coordinate. He's at 5, 5 at the moment. So we make a node, label it 5, 5. We know that guy can reach 4, 5. And we can make a connectivity like this. So 5, 5 can get to 4, 5, can get to 3, 5, which can get to 2 places. Does everyone understand how this graph works? And then we know the stairs are at 1, 1. So we have the goal node here. So what we need to do is find a path from 5, 5 to 1, 1 using these edges that were given.
So just to remind you from last time, this is an undirected graph because if you can go from one node to another node, you can go back.
There's not like chutes and ladders or something. This is just a hallways, and you can walk either direction down the hallway. So what I wanted to do is introduce a special type of graph called a tree.
So what makes a tree different from a normal graph is there are types of edges. There are parent edges, and there are children edges. So a node can only have one parent. It's not like people usually have two parents or more. But a node in a tree can only have one parent. That's how it works. But have as many children, 0 to infinity children, as many as it feels like. So what we need to do is understand why trees are important. The reason trees are good for this sort of thing is given any node on the bottom, the green nodes, we can easily find the shortest path back to the only path back to the root node. So what is the difference between the nodes of different colors? Can you, given the
I'll animate it.
Well, it's not going to animate it.
I know, but when you want it to, I'll be ready.
So, given the vocabulary we had with the graphs from before, we had sources, sinks, which would the red node be?
Source.
So on a tree, we actually call that by something different. We call it a root, because trees have roots. And we like metaphors. What would the green nodes be? Right. On a tree, we call those leaves.
Because they're green.
Yes, or maybe the other way around. So, the red node is the root, as I say here. Green nodes are leaves. We also call the collection of all the leaves the fringe. Doesn't really fit into the metaphor so much, but it's what we call it. All right, so finding the path to the root from a leaf is extremely easy, because we follow the parent edges up. Click, click, etc. Right? So, if we can somehow make a tree to represent the maze where the root is the starting point and one of the leaves is the ending point, we should very easily be able to find the path from the start to the end. All right, so how do we build a maze? What's the root? I'll give you a hint, I said it 3 seconds ago. The source, well, in relation to the maze.
Guy.
The guy, where we start. 5, 5. What are the children of the root node?
Leaves.
Yes, but in context of the maze we have here. Which one of these nodes in the graph am I going to make the root node, or the child node of this root? Is there an edge from 5, 5 to 1, 1?
Yeah. 1, 5.
Hmm? 1, 5. 1, 5. I don't think there's an edge there either. In fact, I only see one edge from 5, 5. 4, 5.
Oh. Yeah, we'll get to those other nodes in just a moment.
So. Now we have a tree. It has two nodes. One is the leaf node, and one is the root node. We continue this process. Now if we do this again, which will be the next leaf node? Right? So now we have a new leaf. 4, 5 is now no longer a leaf. We could easily find a path from 3, 5 to 5, 5, because we just follow the parent edges. What are the children of 3, 5?
2, 5 and 3, 4.
Good. Now, if we do this step again, what will the new leaf nodes be?
1, 5, and 3, 4. I have a question.
Yes.
The yellow ones, one like 4, 5, and 3, 5.
Yes.
They're no longer leaves.
Right. So, what's the definition of a leaf? Right. So it has no children. Has no outgoing edges. So, right, they are no longer leaves. So I change their colors.
So what are they?
Nodes.
Nodes?
Internal nodes would be one way to say it. Because they're inside the tree, they're not on one of the edges. But yeah, they're just tree nodes. Right? Expand all of them, keep going down. It branches again. Now we have 3 leaves. Eventually, we find a leaf node, which is the exit. So now how do we use this to find a path to the entrance?
Well,
Right, so now we have a path that goes from the end to the beginning, and we know we can follow this path both directions, so we can go from the beginning to the end. So we found a path through the maze. Using this very, there wasn't really any hand-waving about this. There was, you knew exactly what to do each time. And this will, in fact, work on any maze. This is the path we found, yes?
I got a question about that. Those two leaves aren't exactly sinks, are they?
So no.
Get out of them.
Why is it not going back? There
it is. It just, it pains. Sorry.
Okay, no problem.
5151.
Right.
Two on the right. There aren't, they're not sinks, though, are they?
On this tree, they are.
But not in the ground.
The tree and the graph are not the same thing.
Okay.
We created this tree using the graph.
Gotcha.
But they're actually two different
things. So are we allowed to have the same nodes showing up in multiple paths?
Why not?
Because then we're confused. Like, what if we get to the goal in two different ways?
We can. Well,
this picture. No, we could.
What if 5-1 was the exit?
Yeah, what if 5-1 was the exit?
Well then, we choose one of them.
Oh.
And we know that they have the same length because they're the same depth in the tree. And then it doesn't really matter which one we choose because they're the same length. They're both just as good as each other, assuming we just want the shortest path. Ta-da.
Oh. It's okay, just hit it one more.
Oh. So this is presumably, if we look at this, this is actually a tree. I don't know how well you can see these arrows, but this is where we started. We have little arrows pointing to where we came from. So the parent of this node is that X. There's all these up arrows pointing to the parents. We eventually find our way down here and follow up arrows through the thought bubble, around and around. And I'll demonstrate that more clearly in a minute.
I think that's the last one. Okay. So now, go back to some demos.
So now we're going to use that method to solve this maze. So we're starting at the root. What we're going to do is we're going to draw the tree on this maze. I don't know how well that shows up.
Not so well.
But in fact, there's a blue arrow right there. That blue arrow represents the fringe. It's the set of one leaf nodes, because there's only one so far. Now what we want to do is explore all the leaf nodes, or explore all the children from that leaf node. So the guy's going to hop over there.
Stand out.
Well, only it'll be green soon.
It'll be green soon.
He hops over there, creates a new fringe. Now we have two. So it doesn't really matter which order he explores in. I hope you can actually see that, but there's a blue arrow to his left and there's a blue arrow directly beneath him.
And they're pointing at him?
And they're pointing at him. Right. So when he creates an arrow, it's in one of the spaces next to him and points to him, unless there's already an arrow there. So now what happens is he's going to a blue node, or a blue arrow, he jumps on it, creates a green arrow. And the reason I have a difference between blue and green is so you can tell the difference. We have here, this is where the guy is. He jumps, and he forms a bunch of arrows. These will all be blue. Now we want to explore all of these before we go any further. So when he explores this one, he finds a bunch of these. I draw these arrows as green. And he knows he has to finish doing the blue ones before he goes to the green ones. So. You can see he's going around, exploring them all one at a time. And in fact, we just let him go. I always have Mario music playing in my head when I see this.
What kind of music?
Mario.
Oh.
Super Mario 1. feeling that I'm the only one who's ever played that game. So you can watch me build the tree through the maze. You will presumably get there in the end.
This guy's more powerful than the other guy because he can hop anywhere, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't have to restrict ourselves to the metaphor of the guy actually running around the maze, because the computer, in fact, knows about every location in the maze. So we can just say, I want to look at here, I want to look at here. So we have a guy hopping around. Does anyone have any questions about how this works?
What is it? What's on there now? There's a red path.
Oh, the red path is when we follow the from the leaf node back to the root. That's what we're doing. So red path is go, just follow the direction of the arrows, coloring whichever one we're on, red, until we get back to the beginning. Yeah?
Is the red path the fastest path? Or?
Yes. Why is it the fastest path, though? Does anyone see that?
Sure.
Why? How do we know we didn't skip the shortest path by accident?
There's at least more nodes.
So,
like that. Yeah.
What was the thing?
It has the least amount of nodes.
Right, because every path that we've explored so far, like whenever we explore a new path, we're exploring all paths of a certain length. Then we explore all paths of one longer than that. So the moment we find the exit, we know that there are no paths to the exit that are shorter than we have, that are shorter than what we found, because we explored every single one of them. Therefore, this path must be the shortest.
Does anyone want to see that again?
Sure.
I'll just do a fast version. Maybe I shouldn't, but I will anyway.
So, isn't that illuminating?
What happens if we do something like this? Will this method still find the shortest path?
What's like what? Starting in the middle, you mean?
Yeah, we're starting in the middle now. Will this guy still find the shortest path?
Yeah.
Yes, because we already proved that it will always find the shortest path using this method. But how much of the maze do you think he'll explore? Given that he's starting at the exact center.
All
of it.
It's a little bit like me and my keys.
Yeah. Oh, this is going fast. But, yeah, you don't need to see him jump.
All of it.
Well,
I guess because it's not all equally far.
Right. Technically, he explored all the paths shorter than the distance. But there were some especially windy ways which he didn't have to go to because they were longer.
How can we correct this? What if we, when exploring through the graph, you know, we have, this is the tree from before. We have this set of fringe nodes, right? What if we always choose the closest one to the goal as the next one to explore? So say this one, when I say closest, I mean the distance between here and the goal is what? We count, maybe 7 or something up here, another 6 up here. That would be a distance of 13 to the goal, because 7 plus 6 is 13. What if we use that to selectively choose which one we explore first? So now we have a different fringe. Right? Maybe we want to explore that one again because it's still the closest. Now our fringe looks like that. So that's what this guy's going to do now. He's always going to explore the closest node first. found the path. He found it exploring far less of the entire maze. But there may be some problems with this. What if we use this maze and do that strategy? What do you think is going to happen? There's two ways you know that. One way is if you really understand how BFS works and how this strategy works. Another way is, why would I show this unless you can take the long way? And in fact, you'll see. He takes the long way, he explores every single spot on the maze.
Now, if
the fourth time it's first path.
You're gonna show this next.
What am I gonna show next?
Well, if you remove the little block.
I might. To be honest, I don't remember what's next. That's why I have these little tab completions here.
Yeah, that.
Right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to trick this guy. And in fact, because we explore the leaf nodes in this order, in this special order, always exploring the first one, or always exploring the closest one first, we can trick this guy into finding a path that is clearly not the best. So, this guy will often find a path first because, you know, he only explored the nodes in that path, but he might not always find the best path, where if we only explore like all of these and all of these and all of these, we know he will always find the best path, though it might take a while. And we can see how the old strategy will work on this case. He explored some way into the red herring area, but not that far. It turns out there is a there's an algorithm that sort of takes the best of both worlds. We choose which node to explore first based on, you know, it's a strategy I'm not really going to go into because I wouldn't expect even third year computer science undergrads to really get it that well. But we watch him do it. He didn't explore all the maze. He will always find the shortest path. So there's an algorithm called A*STAR which will do that.
If you want to learn more about A*STAR, you take the undergrad AI class because it's a big, it's used quite a lot in AI.
You'd have to be pretty deep into the computer science major to take that though.
Is that right? There's lots of prerequisites. They can't just take it from here?
It's a 400 level class.
Ah, broken. Okay.
Does anyone have any questions about this? Is there any part you want to see again?
So a lot of this was based on breadth first search.
Right.
Did you also talk about depth first search? What about the breadcrumbs and the string?
Oh, yeah.
Is that?
So I can also show depth first search. Which breadcrumbs and string is depth first search. So what the difference between that and I want to bring up my graph again. So go to Keynote.
To the left. Keep going. Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, it's still here, okay. So, go back. So the way depth first search works is, you know, we start here, we go here, we go here, and then instead of keeping track of both of these, we only do one, and we'll go all the way until either we reach the goal, or if we chose this way first, we realize that we're getting stuck. So you search deep into the thing without exploring all possible avenues. So is that likely to find the best path? So that's similar to the guy with the crumbs and the string. And we already showed that he would sometimes get very lost.
In this graph, there only is a shortest path. There is no other path, right?
Right, unfortunately. But.
Simple path.
So if we show that So this guy will do depth first search, just to show you again. Because of course it goes immensely fast, but just do a slow version. He'll keep going along an individual path until he realizes that he has gotten stuck, which he knows because there's either a crumb or a wall in every direction he goes, and he backtracks until he finds another way to go. So that would be depth first search. And we showed earlier with that especially long path that this guy will not always find the best path. So there are disadvantages to depth first search when solving a maze. So that's the extent of the demos I've got.
Thanks, man.
I'll set a page. We'll get there eventually.
Thank you very much. And it even has like little video game aspects, right? So when he's walking towards us, you can see his front, and when he's walking away, you see his back. It's very slick. Is he wearing a diaper?
I'm not sure.
All right, then.
I stole that image from Dragon Warrior.
That's a video game.
That's older than all the students in this class.
All right. I don't quite know how to control this. All right, so thanks again. So, interestingly, we actually have, only 13 minutes left. So what I'd like to do is I'll dive a little bit into the lecture that I prepared for today. And then I'll decide later whether I want to finish this next time or jump back to the sorting. I'll probably want to finish this. I thought there'd be a big deal with voting machines. I mentioned them on Monday. And yesterday, it looks like there were some issues with voting machines, but none of them were quite as horrible as people imagine. But just to scare you again, this is a cool video made just down Route 1 from here of people hacking a voting machine. And I just thought this was really neat, and it gives you a sense of it's cool. There's some computer science in it, but a lot of it is just, deviousness.
LSE.princeton.edu/voting. The behavior of voting machines is controlled by computer software.
The software use one of these? I don't know if they have it in New Jersey.
Is written by Diebold.
Anybody? Who voted?
Our study shows that a criminal who can inject malicious software into this voting machine can control how the votes are tallied. His malicious software can steal votes, and it can cover its tracks so that the theft cannot be detected.
So maybe
to illustrate this danger, we have created in our laboratory a demonstration software program that steals votes. This video will show our demonstration software in operation. We will also show how a criminal can inject malicious software into a voting machine, and how he can create a computer virus that spreads itself between voting machines, injecting malicious software on every machine it infects.
Has anybody seen this already?
We will now show how to steal votes in a simulated election. On the morning of election day, the voting machine awaits instructions. The machine appears to be functioning normally, but unbeknownst to any observer, it contains malicious software that will steal votes. The machine greets the election workers normally. At this point, the election worker can perform so-called logic and accuracy tests that are supposed to determine whether the machine is functioning correctly. Logic and accuracy testing is essentially
a
happened,
but they really did this in the lab.
The worker
really
casts
a real machine
and
they hacked it.
And then the machine counts the pretend votes. The election worker makes sure that the pretend count is correct. Our vote-stealing software can tell that the worker is doing logic and accuracy testing, so this is not a real election. It allows the pretend votes to be counted correctly, so that the machine passes the test. Everything still looks normal. Now, the election worker tells the machine to start the election. The machine prints out a paper tape showing that no votes have been recorded yet. The election has begun. The first voter approaches the machine to cast his vote. The election workers have given him a voter card, which will allow him to cast one vote. He inserts the voter card into the machine, and the machine presents him with a ballot. In this example election, there are two candidates for president, George Washington and Benedict Arnold. The voter chooses George Washington.
Duh.
The machine asks him to confirm his vote, and he does so. The machine ejects the voter card after marking it as used. That's one vote for George Washington. Four more voters cast their votes. They vote for George Washington, Benedict Arnold, George Washington, and George Washington. The correct result for this election is George Washington, four votes, Benedict Arnold, one vote. Election day is now over. An election worker approaches the machine, inserts a supervisor card, and tells the machine to end the election. The machine prints out a paper tape announcing the results.
There weren't that many candidates. I don't know what it's doing.
The tape shows that Benedict Arnold won the election, 3-2. This result is incorrect. Malicious software stole votes from George Washington and gave them to Benedict Arnold. The voting machine recorded the election results on its internal memory and on a removable memory card. A poll worker opens the side of the machine and removes the memory card. The memory card, when examined by technicians, also shows that Benedict Arnold won the election, 3-2. Every record kept by the voting machine shows the same fraudulent result, Arnold 3, Washington 2. How did this happen? The voting machine was running Diebold's election software, but it was also, silently, running our demonstration vote-stealing software. And our software was able to steal votes without being detected. When the election ends, the vote-stealing software can delete itself from the voting machine. No evidence remains that the machine was ever hijacked. No evidence remains that any votes were stolen. As far as anyone can tell, the election was conducted fairly, but the result is fraudulent. This vote-stealing attack requires injecting malicious software into the voting machine. Anyone who has access to a voting machine for a few minutes can install malicious code. Here is one way to do so. In advance, we prepare a memory card containing malicious software. When we get a few minutes alone with the machine, we first open the side door. We can do this with a key. There are thousands of keys in circulation, and any hardware store will copy them. Even without a key, the lock is easily picked.
So these are computer science graduate students, who also, by the way, know how to pick locks.
Or we can simply remove a few screws and lift off the machine's cover. Next, we remove any memory card that is already in the machine and insert our prepared memory card. We press the power button to boot the machine. When the machine boots, it will automatically install our malicious software for us. The machine makes a musical noise when it boots, but we can suppress this noise by inserting headphones into the machine. We remove our memory card, replace any card that was there before, and close the door.
Why would they
our
put headphone jacks
now
on a
installed
phone machine?
On the machine? The total elapsed time is less than 1 minute. Due to design flaws in the Diebold AccuVote TS voting machine, it is possible to construct a computer virus that infects these machines and spreads automatically from one machine to many others. To illustrate this, we have constructed a demonstration virus in our lab. The machines use removable memory cards to distribute software updates and store the results of elections. The memory cards function similarly to floppy disks or thumb drives on ordinary PCs. Memory cards act as carriers for the virus. When a memory card is inserted into an infected machine, the machine copies the virus onto that memory card. If the memory card is removed and later put into another machine, the virus spreads from the memory card to the new machine.
So normally you think about viruses spreading on the computer network,
spread.
But these guys aren't
networked.
The virus
can spread from
But the point is, as soon as you put in a card, the virus can write itself onto the card.
The
and now that card is infected. Any place you put that card gets infected, too.
That's
true.
Installed on every infected machine. For example, our demonstration virus carries our vote stealing software, so that every machine that catches the virus will steal votes. A criminal could use this kind of virus to install malicious software on many voting machines, even if he has access to only a few machines, or even only one. By planting a virus far enough in advance, he can ensure that a significant number of machines will steal votes on election day. These problems, taken together, pose a very serious threat to the security of the elections conducted on Diebold AccuVote TS voting machines. We urge public officials to address these issues promptly. More details, including a full technical paper containing a more complete security analysis and a discussion of mitigation strategies, can be found on our website.
That's kind of spooky. The other thing, I thought it was on this video, but I guess it wasn't. They also found out that instead of picking the locks or having a copy of the key, it turns out that minibar keys from hotels work just fine on these devices. So if you just happen to have kept a minibar key, but one of the graduate students apparently discovered this. He's like, oh yeah, I went to a hotel. He's like, I have a pile of keys in my office. I'll be right back. And he takes one key, and he goes over to the machine, and he opens up the memory card protection place. So, you know, I haven't heard anything about anyone actually having done any of this, but it is very spooky. What's that?
Something like non-public.
So that's a good question. That's a very good question. Security by obscurity. You just don't let people know. But I think the point is, this message wasn't for criminals. This message was for public officials to say, maybe you should think before you actually install this, because we figured this out. A lot of other people can figure this out. The people who designed these computers could figure it out. So anyway, so it's, you know, it seems like maybe this didn't happen this time, and maybe people will fix it before the next. We've got two more years before the next big election. But anyway, I thought it was interesting to see how devious these people actually can be, and these are, you know, these are sort of the good guys. So all right, anyway, so that actually ran us out of time. I'll pick up next time, probably with sorting, and then I'll come back and do this lecture. Thanks a lot. Good rest of the week. Take your eye.